You're listening to Central Time. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up tonight after 7 on Latino USA, we hear from a group of elementary school children who fought to bring forgotten history back into their textbooks. That's tonight after 7 here on the Ideas Network.
First, for many fans of PBS, this is a familiar song. Uh-huh, that's right. That's the theme for the popular and enduring Antiques Roadshow. For years, people have been taking their treasures to be appraised by the show's crack team of experts. For some, their heirlooms aren't worth as much as they thought. And for others, their unassuming items are truly priceless.
It's a show that's been delighting viewers and participants since its debut. And Wisconsinites will get a chance to bring their antiques to be appraised when the show comes to Green Bay in June. And joining us now to talk about the show and why it works and how viewers can join the fun is Marcia Bemko. She's the executive producer of Antiques Roadshow. Marcia, welcome to Central Time.
I'm delighted to be here. And if you could see me, if you had like radio vision, you'd see that I still bounce around when I hear that music.
it's a perky song for sure. Can you tell us about how long you've been with Antiques Roadshow?
Well, here we are getting ready to shoot our 22nd season, and I have been with Roadshow since right after season 3 taped. So, a few years there. Hmm.
And how long has Antiques Roadshow, it's been on the air, you said, 21? Seasons?
Yeah, we're broadcasting season 21 now, and we first started in 1997 touring in broadcasting, and we had we've actually been to your state. You were one of our early ones. We were there in season 3, which was 1997 was our broadcast year. 1996 was our first year of touring.
How has it evolved over the years? How have you seen it evolve?
Well, it's interesting. The show has evolved, and so has the field of antiques. You've watched us, and even if you've seen we've already revisited the Madison shows and the Milwaukee shows from our early ones, the vintage shows where we update prices. You can see all the learnings that as a production team we've had, and just like any other job, whether you're making television or you're making shoes, when you make your 10th pair of shoes, they're better than your first pair of shoes. So we have learned a lot over the years as producers. We've become our own kind of television experts in antiques. So let me give you a simple example. So when you first started watching the show, you may have noticed our experts didn't always tell you when they gave a value, whether that value was an auction value, a retail value, insurance, you didn't know. Pretty much now when you watch a show that's a new show that we've made recently, that's always there unless we've made a mistake. I mean, it makes a difference because an auction price of $10,000 can be the same as a retail price of $20,000. So we've learned that kind of thing. And then as far as the public's concerned, even the kinds of items that we see over the years, it's quite different. So in the early years, our pottery and porcelain line was huge. Now it's still a good line, but I think the paintings line will beat that.
Do you ever get worried when you set off for a new location that this is going to be the show where everyone just has worthless thimbles or tin plates and none of it's going to be worth anything and that you're going to have a clunker of a show?
You know, in the early days, I might have thought that, but now I have confidence that that won't happen. The statistics are with us. The day that we come, about 5,000 people will come to the show. And they will bring two objects each, and we will see about 10,000 items.
Wow.
And when you see that many things, and people who are coming are bringing, as one of our experts used to say, if the house were on fire and the family were safe, these are the two things they saved from the house. So they're bringing something they're really curious about. They're bringing usually often a family heirloom, something they think is, quote-unquote, really good. And so we get a chance to see, frankly, there's not enough camera time for all that we see.
Hmm. Has there been a favorite city for you that you've traveled to for this show?
Not really.
Okay.
I every city has a personality. I will say that one of the things I like about your area of the country is your distinctive accents. Now, you're listening to me as a Bostonite saying, who has an accent? Yeah.
Wait, yeah, we don't have accents. No accents here.
But I always know when we're watching our Madison shows and our Milwaukee shows, I don't need a city bug to tell me where I am. I can hear it.
Wow, that's fun. Well, we're talking right now with Marcia Bemko, executive producer of Antiques Roadshow. And Antiques Roadshow is coming to Wisconsin, coming to Green Bay in June. And we want to share a clip from the show. This is from a few years ago, but it seems to really capture people's imagination. It's an appraisal of a rare textile in Arizona.
This is the beginning of Navajo weaving.
Wow.
And not only that, the condition of this is unbelievable. Unbelievable. Wow. We see these. We've got a little bit of damage over there.
We have
a very interesting thing here.
This is
almost like silk. It's made from hand-woven wool,
yeah,
but it's so finely done, it's like silk.
Wow.
It would repel water. And this here is dyed with indigo dyes. It was a very valuable dye at the time. And what's really interesting is right here, we have an old repair that was probably done in the 1860s. And it's done with raveled bayeta, which is in itself a very important thing in Navajo weaving. So all involved, it's an extraordinary piece of art. It's extremely rare. It is the most important thing that's come into the roadshow that I've seen. Do you have a sense at all of what you're looking at here in terms of value?
I haven't a clue.
Are you a wealthy man, Ted?
No.
Well, sir, I'm still a little nervous here, I have to tell you. On a really bad day, this textile would be worth $350,000. On a good day, it's about $500,000.
Oh, my God.
You had no idea.
I had no idea. I just laying on the back of a chair.
Well, sir, you have a national treasure.
Wow.
A national treasure.
Wow, that clip is amazing. And according to Antiques Roadshow, since it was originally appraised, that Navajo Ute blanket is now appraised between $750,000 and $1 million. Do you remember that one, Marcia?
That's Ted from Tucson, so yes, do I remember that. And I'm sitting in a booth with no notes. That was an amazing day. I was there that day. It was an amazing discovery. It's a very rare Navajo weaving. And this is the privilege of my job, is how many wonderful and rare objects I have seen, been able to touch. Yes, go ahead, eat your hearts out. I've touched a lot of those things you've seen. And I'll never forget it, because I talked to Ted afterwards, because that was something that his foster grandmother had handed down to him. He had retired. He had very little money. He was living in a trailer home, and this was a life-changing moment for him.
Mm.
He is one of our rare guests, because most don't, no matter what it's worth, but I happen to know that he did sell that to a museum.
Oh,
in a
wow.
private sale. Yeah. So life-changing for him.
And you get a glimpse inside of people's lives and the pieces that they have collected along their journey. How does that feel for you as the executive producer to weave these stories together? And even though there's a dollar amount involved, you are really, at the end of the day, telling stories.
We're telling stories, and they're very intimate stories. We are basically rummaging around in your attic, in your underwear drawer, in front of 8.5 million people. And that is something where people, our guests who come in, they're willing to share their stories with us. And all of us on the production, and I'm sure all of you at home who've watched Roadshow, have cried with our guests. They are very attached to the objects. They're family heirlooms. They mean more than money to them. They're glad to know. They may want to get some insurance now so that in case something happens. But for the most part, they're really touched by the discovery, touched by, frankly, not even learning if it's just money, but they were wondering, is this from Connecticut, or did my parents get this when, or my great-great-grandparents get this while they were in Europe still? So to answer those kinds of questions for them, it is very personally satisfying, and it's emotional for us, even those of us who have a thicker skin, who we've been on the show for a while. it doesn't, no pun intended, that doesn't get old.
You said earlier that it's more rare for the item in question to be sold than it is for it to be kept. Does that surprise you at all? I mean, you think at the end of the day, this is also about money, and sometimes people really need money. What is it about those objects that makes them so precious?
It surprised me when I first came to do the show, and I thought, oh my God, if I owned that, I'd sell that. Well, that's because it wasn't my great-great-grandmother's object. I've learned over time that people just won't unless they have a real need. There's a good reason for that. When you hear our experts, as I explain, they give you context for price. You know, is it auction or retail? No matter where you sell it, even if you do an online seller, very inexpensive, there's a cost to sell. There's always a cost to sell. So whether, you know, unless you have something of huge value, an auction house might waive your buyer's premium, but pretty much you're going to pay something to sell it. So the day you sell it, you can't afford to buy it back. A fair price for a retail person to pay you is just like any other retail, half of what it would retail for. And so you can't afford to buy it back from him if you could find it. And so with unique family objects, or things that are unique to that family anyway, they are very careful before letting them go, because for the most part they are not 20 years old and they understand and value their history. I've been green with envy when I see guests come in with objects that have been in their family since the 1600s. I don't know about either of you, but I don't have that.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, it's pretty rare, and it's what an amazing thing.
We're talking with Marcia Bemko now. She's the executive producer of PBS's hit show, Antiques Roadshow. It's coming to Green Bay in June.
And you can join the conversation. What are some of your favorite moments from the show? What question do you have about having your items appraised? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can leave a comment on the Central Time Facebook page. And just a heads up, we won't be able to appraise your items on the air.
And we'll continue our conversation in just a little bit here on Central Time.
This is Central Time. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Veronica Rickert, and we're continuing our conversation about PBS's hit show, Antiques Roadshow, with its executive producer, Marcia Bemko, and the program will be coming to Green Bay this June.
And what questions do you have about the show? Want to share some of your favorite memories of the show? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or leave a comment on the Central Time Facebook page. And please remember that we can't appraise your antiques here on the air.
Let's take a caller now. We've got David joining us in Waukesha. David, hi.
Hello, how are you?
Good, thank you.
I was just calling to say that it must have been at least 10 years back. My wife and I went to the road show when it was in Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm. And what was that like?
And it was really amazing. The number of people that were waiting to go in, I forget the name of the building, but it wrapped around the entire outside of the building.
Wow.
People waiting to come in this long queue. And I can't remember what my wife and I brought, but I can tell you that it was fascinating to see all the stuff that people had that were standing in line in front of us or behind us, and how we're all exchanging information about what we thought it might be worth and the history. It was just fascinating to see the things that people were bringing in to have appraised.
David, that's really cool. I had no idea that the line wrapped around the block, but, you know, hearing that people are in the thousands when they come to this, Marcia, it sounds as though there's almost this informal little community that grows up around a particular show. Is that right?
That's right. And what David's describing, I'm sitting here grinning. I think he's probably talking about we were there in 2006 for our season, in season 11. People do start get friendly in line. They show each other their objects. They start to talk. There's like a little party going on. What I hope is that we do a good job and not have you waiting in long, long lines. But, you know, inevitably there are some lines. But that is a very common experience. What we hope doesn't happen is that the thing you didn't know anything about while you're waiting in line, that the person ahead of you doesn't appraise it before you come in. But other than that, we're happy.
So, Marcia, how does the show find its experts?
We work with a group of about 150 experts, assigning approximately 70 to every venue. The we find them, we're very careful. At this point, we have our veteran experts who you all know and have seen on our air for a long time. But every year, we do have to add new experts. People retire or no longer available to do the show. And when it comes time for finding somebody new, depending upon what category, is it paintings or collectibles, we will look among other experts. We often have people who are soliciting us, and they've been contacting us for a long, long time, wanting to be on the show. Something that everyone should understand about our experts, because it's a biggie, they donate their services to public television. They help put the public in public television. Mm. They donate their time. We do not pay them for any of the television appearances they make, and they also pay their own travel and pay their own hotel nights.
Oh, wow.
So they do this as a service. It's also, you know, been life-changing for them as well. But they've learned a lot on the show, too. And they like, they're constantly hungry for that kind of learning. And so we choose them. When we do choose somebody new, we check them out very, very carefully. We do background checks. We do gossip checks. We want to make sure, because we know once we put that person on our roadshow set, you will trust them. And we're going to make sure that they're worthy of that trust.
Oh, that's good to know. Wow. Let's take another phone call here. We've got Gail joining us in Madison. Hi, Gail.
Hi. I have a question. I'm not looking for an appraisal. I have an antique carved tusk that's been in the family for about 60 years, and I don't have papers for it. Is there anyone on the roadshow that would have the expertise to date that?
Did she say tusk? Did you say tusk?
An elephant tusk.
It is a tusk, ivory tusk.
Very elaborately carved, and it's been in the family, you know, sitting on its stand for about 60 years. And, you know, it gets passed down, but the paperwork has never been passed down. And I understand it's illegal to sell something that is newer than that. And I'm wondering if on the roadshow you have someone that would be able to give me a value and also a date.
We do. Our experts who are in the Asian arts are able to assess your tusk. It's not an object that we will air anymore. It's illegal, and frankly, even if you, in certain states, and it varies by state. I frankly don't know what the laws are in your state for ivory, but they do vary by state, and in some states it's not legal to cross state lines with it. And you're right, you do need some paperwork. To really do anything with that object. It's tricky, and I don't have a simple answer for you. One thing you could do is if you go to the Antiques Roadshow website, pbs.org/antiques, and you look up our experts who are there in Asian arts, and you'll see those who you've seen on our air, including Lark Mason, Dessa Goddard, et cetera, and email them and ask them, because they're dealing with this question all the time. You know, this is something that was, up until more recent years, traded quite commonly in the market, and under certain conditions does still trade. But it's dicey, and I don't even know all the rules.
Hmm.
It's tricky. It's very, very tricky.
Gail, good luck, and thanks so much for calling in. Let's now go to Richard in Milwaukee. Hi, Richard.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. Well, I'm a huge fan, just like everybody is, so thank you for your work. It's a phenomenal show. The question I have is, I've tried to get tickets before. In fact, when the show came to Milwaukee, I believe, a number of years ago, I tried to get tickets, and it seemed quite complicated, and, I wasn't sure how to traverse it. Could you just give us a general idea when you come to a city of how to go about getting a ticket?
Of course. Right now, up until April 10th, so you have, 6 more days, where you can go onto our website and register for a pair of tickets. Now, what we do in every venue that we are visiting, we're going to give out 3,000 pairs of tickets. So 6,000 pairs to people like you who are putting in for those tickets. Now I get to boast. For me, it's a boast. For you, it makes your odds a little harder. I get to boast, as of 3 p.m. today, how many people have applied for tickets in Green Bay? That would be $15,416.
Oh my gosh.
Hot off the presses info.
Oh my goodness.
So what happens when you apply is you have to hope that luck, Lady Luck, is with you. Or you could apply to a different city, but, you know, actually if you... Portland right now is in the lead. That's the last city we're going to. This is a very population-driven thing, folks. And they've got over 21,000 applicants there. So that is very typical for roadshows. So it is, it can be hard sometimes to get a ticket. I know stations, and I'm not sure, you know, they can run out quick, and I'm not sure where your station is at this point. The stations do have some tickets available for pledging, which is, you know, a donation to your station. I'm not sure if this station has any left. They tend to go quickly, and they may be gone by now, so yeah. I don't know the answer to that. But get on our website and apply, because guess what? We do pick 3,000, and you could be one of them.
It sounds sort of like getting tickets for Hamilton.
maybe
harder than getting tickets for Hamilton.
It could be harder.
At least in Wisconsin.
Ours is free, though. We won't charge
right,
you.
Right, yours is free. That's a good point. Well, good luck, Richard. I hope you get in this time. Good luck to you.
I hope you do, too, Richard.
And, Marcia, you know, we've been talking about, I mean, another theme. We talked about storytelling. Another theme is history. Do you feel and do you think that the people who come to you and learn things, just briefly, do you think they feel more connected to their history and the roots that came before them?
I believe so. And from the audience that we do hear from, they tell us that. If you watch a season of Roadshow and you don't learn when the Civil War happened, you didn't have the audio on. Mm-hmm. You're going to learn something about our country, even if you don't want to. You sort of learn by this, it's like a spoonful of sugar. You can't help but learn. And, you know, for me, that's fascinating, finding out about places like the Spiral Jetty. Who knew? You'll learn that in our Salt Lake City episodes that are airing now. That kind of thing is... I know I'm enjoying it.
And, Marcia, I'm sorry we're out of time. Thank you so much.
Can't wait to see you all.
Thank you.